You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm John Wellborn, joined by Mr. Chris McQuilkin.
Howdy.
And we are joined today with Dan Solomon.
Yes.
CEO for the Olympia. Is that a good title?
That works.
All right.
All right. Chief Olympia Officer and friends with our dear friend, Mr. Fairfax Hackley. And I'm very gracious for that man to connect.
The legend. The legend.
Yes. And Dan, John, and I attended the 2021 Mr. Olympia in Orlando, Florida. And that was awesome.
I think I was at the 2009 Mr. Olympia as well. So years ago when it was in Vegas.
I love that you guys have experienced the sensory overload that is Olympia weekend. And if you enjoyed the one in Orlando a couple of years ago, you're going to love what we're working on now, because now keep in mind that window of time when you attended the Olympia in Orlando, that was during sort of a COVID-ish environment, right? Where we were still navigating through all that. So it was a bit of a watered down, smaller experience than what we are accustomed to presenting. So we're excited now that, you know, we kind of have the freedom to do things in a big way. And we're fortunate enough to have an ownership group that funds this thing in a way that allows us to have a lot of fun. So hopefully you guys will be with us this November in Orlando as we present Joe Weider's Olympia number 59.
Wow. So for years, it was always in Vegas. Vegas was kind of the hotbed. And then obviously it's moved down to Florida. Florida is so designed for these kind of large events, and it has, you know, hotels, much like Vegas. But I feel like for that type of stuff, Florida is such a natural place for it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So we have kind of created this East Coast, West Coast thing that we've been doing the last few years, and it's really worked great for us. So we're not permanently here in Florida. We're here in Florida this year. Last year, we were in Vegas at Planet Hollywood. Next year, we're working on some scenarios that could bring us back to Las Vegas, and we'll know that in the next few days. But, you know, there's a whole ton of fans and sponsors and exhibitors on the East Coast and on the West Coast. So for us to be able to kind of go back and forth, it allows us to build those bridges and be as inclusive as possible. Yeah, Vegas is a great home, and so is Florida. Those are the two top convention cities in the country. And so they have proven to be really welcoming homes for us and our fans.
The one thing that I found when we went in 2020 was all the different classes of bodybuilding and fitness and figure and health and wellness. I mean, it was almost a little overwhelming. And then as a bystander sitting in the audience trying to like decipher like which differentiates the classes. Some of the girls are wearing high heels, some of them aren't, some of them open hand, some were closed hand, just trying to look for the differences. It's pretty fascinating that there are these specific classes that are looking for such a unique look.
Yeah. And it's also lent a lot to the growth of the entire industry, because keep in mind, there was a time when there was four or five big dudes in the gym and with big lats and biceps and sweeping quads and abs and the whole bit. And those were the four or five individuals in your gym that competed. Now, because of the advent of the new divisions, there's actually 11 divisions in total, if you can imagine. Because of all the new divisions, there's a pretty good chance that your neighbor, your lawyer, your dental hygienist, your secretary, or whoever it is in some way connected to, has competed, or knows somebody who has competed. So it's really helped us branch out into, you know, all sorts of new places, because, you know, there's the very popular bikini division on the women's side. There are versions of the bodybuilding division, from the big open division to the classic and the physique divisions, that sort of lend to different types of proportions and structures, some more mainstream than others, some more attainable than others. So it's really helped us not just connect to new audiences and new participation, but also to new media, new sponsors, new exhibitors, new advertisers, because not everybody wants to market to hardcore bodybuilders. So it's really been a win for everybody. And the more people we can get involved in this lifestyle, the better, because it can really be a positive thing if you can use it the right way.
I feel like there was a huge peak in bodybuilding with like the Jay Cutler slash Ronnie Coleman kind of battles. And, you know, I was so much more aware, like, I mean, I think what really got me into lifting weights, I mean, seeing Dorian Yates on the cover of Flex magazine was like a huge deal for us. I mean, I was in high school, we see Dorian Yates and we're like, dude, that's, you know, and then I remember in college, we watched like the Blood and Guts video when my roommate had it. We watched it until the, like the VHS tape no longer worked. And, you know, and then I remember like the Jay Cutler deal, and then it kind of was, I felt like it kind of went down a little bit. And then this resurgence almost with like, classic bodybuilding and Chris Bumsfeld, I think is what his
name. Bumstead. So it's funny because a lot of times we tend to assume that there's peaks and valleys with the whole thing. And I'm sure there's some analytics that might support that, but I think we all have an era. In fact, we once did a study at Flex Magazine years ago, and we kind of figured out that we have the individual's attention for about 4 to 5 years, and then they go on and they have kids and start families and get on with their lives. So, you know, a lot of us, I'm right there with you. I kind of came up in the 90s, the Flex Wheelers and the Kevin Lavronis, and then, of course, on into the Jay Cutler era, and then prior to that, Dorian and the names you mentioned, and Ronnie Coleman, of course. And I think we all connect to that time when we were at our most connected and passionate time. But the reality is, since then, there have been other, you know, eras that have been very popular. Phil Heath just ran off 7 Olympia titles, a very popular champion as well. And then after Phil's reign ended, there's been some other very popular champions in other parts of the world. And we had a Mr. Olympia for a couple of years named Big Ramy, who came from Egypt. And our reigning champion is a gentleman named Hadi Chupan, who comes from Iran. So the popularity sometimes exists regionally in different parts of the world, but you can be sure that when Hadi Chupan, the Iranian Mr. Olympia, gets off an airplane in Iran, he is met with a hero's welcome and parades are held up and down the street. So, the event continues to grow each and every year. And it's definitely starting just the fact that we're on your show, and we appreciate you guys inviting us to be a part of this show, because what you guys are doing almost reflects what we're trying to do. And that is connect to all different parts of the physical culture, whether it's bodybuilding and fitness, or all sorts of different pursuits and powerlifting and strongman. And the list goes on. And the Olympia Expo, the Olympia experience, has become far more encompassing and far more diverse in nature, which I know is kind of part of your model too, because you guys have people from all parts of sports and athletics and fitness and bodybuilding and so on and so forth. So that's basically what we're trying to do as well. And it's been working. We're really proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about bodybuilding or really just performance training, I mean, Joe Weider's name is in there, Arnold Schwarzenegger's name in there. I mean, you know, we train a lot of athletes for performance, but at the end of the day, everybody's aesthetically driven. Like, I like to lift weights. Everybody wants to be in shape and to be able to, you know, I mean, geez, I remember years ago teaching a seminar and telling people that if you didn't know a little something about bodybuilding, you were leaving a ton on the table for your athletes. I mean, bodybuilding has figured out how to make bigger, stronger, larger cross-sectional size of a muscle better than anybody has on the planet. And if you don't know how to do a little bit of it, you're going to leave a whole bunch of gains on the table and you're not servicing your athletes the best way you can.
Isn't it funny how years ago, I remember once when I started working at Muscle and Fitness way back in the day, I interviewed Cal Ripken Jr., and the baseball Hall of Famer. And he talked about how they didn't even have trainers at that time. They didn't even have strength coaches. After the games, they would go out and have beers. Nobody was drinking protein shakes. It was such a different culture, such a different world. And Hollywood never cast leading men that had muscle. And, you know, we can kind of go industry by industry. Even the way my son plays high school baseball at a very competitive high school, and he's a sophomore and he's kind of getting to that age where you're starting to see what these body types are looking like. I played baseball when I was a kid. The kids that I played with look nothing like the kids today in their musculature and their ability to be explosive and all that sort of stuff. And it's really fun just seeing the evolution and how the bodybuilding mindset and the bodybuilding principles and concepts have crossed over to, as you just said, to almost every physical discipline. It's really been fun to watch that. Yeah, because there was a time when the stuff that we did in our corner of the world was frowned upon, and words like impractical and gross were used to describe it. And now it's been fully embraced.
Yeah, no, I always think there'll be a group of individuals or people in the world that like don't appreciate it, but usually those people don't lift weights anyway, and they're not your audience. You know, the guys that go on social media and will say gross if a fitness girl is on there, it looks like a man. I'm like, obviously you don't lift weights. Mm-hmm. Because right. If you think that looks like a man, then we have a different perception of manliness. And you know, when I lived in Orange County, you know, before we moved out here to Texas, I used to train with a bunch of semi-pro bodybuilders, just because they were the only dudes strong enough to train while I was in the NFL. And you know, the dedication for not only like the how much they ate was impressive, but just like the dedication to everything. I was always like, dude, this is like a obsessive compulsive dedication. I mean, it's really the pinnacle for it. I mean, I know it's an aesthetic based deal where you're kind of getting judged, but just the effort and the attention detail those individuals put in was like nothing short of fantastic.
Yeah. It's, I always say that if as a bodybuilding community in the fitness industry, if we're not inspiring people outside of our corner of the world, then we have failed, right? I mean, it's vital that we, the things that we're doing, the ways that we're training, the transformations that you're seeing in the fitness industry, it's vital that those stories resonate outside and really change the lives of the people who aren't as immersed in this lifestyle, because we have failed miserably, to be honest with you. And I say that, I can't say that enough. If all we're doing is being consumed by fellow bodybuilders, and that's something that we really have worked very hard to reach out. That's why we do interviews like this. That's why we try to do as many things as we can to connect in different ways, because there are things happening here. There's lives that are being transformed in ways that go so far beyond Olympia titles and magazine covers that are really meaningful. And we're really hoping that we get opportunities more and more to tell those stories. And we think the more we're able to do that, the more we will be able to grow this thing to a place where we think it deserves the attention that it deserves.
There was a little bit of interesting statistic that I read this morning when I got up. There are less people in this country that have a six pack than there are millionaires. So they have about 15 million millionaires in this country. And there was something like less than like, I don't know, 6% of the population identifies with a six pack. So it's more rare to have a six pack than it is to be a millionaire.
It's interesting, but I'll pile on to that stat, and I'd be curious. I don't have the facts to back this up, but I would imagine that many more millionaires
have six packs.
Also have six packs now, because it seems to be very trendy in the world of success and achievement, and the top achievers in the world. They're all getting up early. They're training. They're doing their cardio. They're lifting weights. They're putting on muscle because they understand the cause and effect, the correlation between living that lifestyle and getting the absolute most out of yourself. So that's the stat that I would love to see, is the percentage of millionaires who have gym memberships, who train and have, in fact, have six packs. Although the challenge of having money in a six pack is tricky, because a lot of times you find yourself at really nice restaurants, and it makes it real difficult to maintain that level of conditioning. But that's another conversation.
Then you end up with like, you know, bringing your food with you to the restaurant, which is funny because my wife
that's
does
a power
that.
Move.
Yeah, no, my wife does that. She'll be like pull out of her like out of her bag like her little meal. And she doesn't trust restaurants. And like she's like, I've been gluten bombed and lit up too many times. And she's like, I don't care if people think I'm weird.
I love it.
Ultimate power move.
Yeah.
But Dan, take us back to your first Mr. Olympia experience and that road that has now led you to this leadership position.
Yeah. So my first Mr. Olympia was in 1998. It was in New York. It was actually the final year before it was on a run of 15 or 20 straight Vegas productions. And it was the year that Ronnie Coleman won the Mr. Olympia for the first time. It was being held at the Paramount Theater, which is at the Madison Square Garden. And I attended purely as a fan. I was in town for unrelated business. I bought a ticket by myself, walked across the street, attended the show just because I had always read the magazines and I was casually interested. And I remember showing up, taking my seat in the 50th row, and I was blown away by it. I was blown away by the production value. I was blown away by the way the athletes presented, by the energy in the audience, by the lighting. I was blown away by just all of it. It was something that I had never experienced before. And I didn't even consider that it could have been this compelling. You know, you figure guys walking on stage, flexing their biceps, how interesting can that be? And when I just saw the way the crowd got behind it and the excitement, each individual competitor, they represented something to everyone different. It was really a unique energy. And I just remember being blown away by it and leaving that building feeling like in some way, shape, or form, I wanted this in my life. And I just didn't know how that was going to manifest. And over time, I ended up connecting with a gentleman named Darren Charles, who's a world-class bodybuilder in his own right. He happened to live not too far from me in South Florida. Through that relationship, and I'm going to try to fast forward through this so I don't take up too much of your time. But through this connection, he and his wife had asked me if I could help them get Darren some endorsement deals. And I didn't really know where to even begin with that, other than to know that Joe Weider, of course, at the time was sort of the pioneering, iconic founder, the godfather, if you will, of the bodybuilding movement. Joe Weider started the first ever nutrition company, started publishing the first ever bodybuilding magazines, and he really built an entire industry. And he was still in a place at that time where he was running Weider Publications, Weider Nutrition. So I picked up the phone. I called up Joe Weider without knowing better. It would have almost been equal to calling up Steve Jobs. I was dumb enough to think that Joe would take my call. Well, I put in a couple calls. He finally called me back. I spent an hour on the phone with him. That phone call changed my life, because I guess we connected in a way that really resonated with both of us. He ended up giving me a job on the spot to do some writing for Muscle and Fitness. And then from there, I had one job after the next. Next thing you know, I'm making my living in this industry. I had served as an editor for a handful of the magazines. I had begun hosting some of the televised world-class physique and bodybuilding championships from the Mr. Olympia on down. And then I just had a handful of responsibilities in production and all sorts of publishing. And a little bit later on, I ended up landing in a really cool project where I served as executive producer of a film called Bigger, which is in fact the story of the aforementioned Joe Weider, how he started the bodybuilding movement back in the 1940s. The movie was the largest budgeted bodybuilding theme movie of all time, still is. The cast included everyone from Tom Arnold and Julianne Hough and Victoria Justice and Robert Forster, one of his final roles before he passed. And the list goes on. It was a really great experience. The film was released in the theaters, had a brief run in the theaters. It didn't do much in the theaters, but then it landed on HBO for a couple of years, and now you can grab it on iTunes and the other paid movie services. But it's called Bigger, and it's Joe's story. So that sort of pulled me closer to a more higher level of creativity and all that sort of thing. And then a short while after that, I found myself at a dinner table with the gentleman who owned and operated and ran a Muscle and Fitness magazine and Olympia Weekend. And by the time that unexpected meal ended, I was offered a job that would change the course of my life, I guess, as sort of the caretaker of the Olympia brand. And it's one that I have served now for about 5 years.
Wow. Dude, I'm pretty impressed. Now I want to go to dinner. I'm like, my God.
Bring your own food.
No. I have a feeling there's some better places in Vegas to go.
Tell your wife, if we all end up going to dinner, she's got to leave the food at home. We're going to go out and we're going to eat, and she's going to get sodiumed up, and we're going to,
My wife's the only person I know. She's like in phenomenal shape, but she's the only person I know that one of our buddies has a gym and they do some local challenges. So they brought in like a bod pod machine for like kind of the befores and afters. So she got her bod pod, and she was the only person I know that like started at 14% body fat. So she came home and she's like, look at this. I don't think that there's a bodybuilders that step on stage. Maybe some of like the figure girls are 14, but I was like, sub 10% for a woman. She's like, no, I can, it's pretty easy. Right. And I'm like, yeah, you're good. You'll be fine. But yeah, no, I think there's certain people that like fitness and training just becomes part of their life, and it's everything that they do. And like, even if after they retire, it's still what they do. And I think that, if we could just get more people into that mindset. And I think that's an interesting bridge, because you see like the Olympia and, these individuals that are, look to be at the peak of physical, development. And like, how does that, like trying to cross that bridge to the average person who really maybe not have a gym membership, or like, how do you inspire? Like, that's always felt like there's gotta be a way to kind of get that over the top.
No, the way to do it really is to remind everyone that we're not trying to make you look like these folks that are on the magazine covers, or these guys that walk on Mr. Olympia stages. We're trying to get you to tap in to the transformational power and the knowledge and the overall wealth of experiences that they can deliver that can help you get to where you want to go. I always laugh, and I know we touched on this earlier, when somebody says, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be all muscular. It just, as you know, it just doesn't work. If only it was so easy, right?
Yeah. But, well, I mean, you mean you just don't go in one time and then all of a sudden you look, oh, you know, we hear this all the time. Oh, I can't lift weights just one or two times and I'll be so muscular. Right. It doesn't look right. And I'm always like, shit, I've been trying to get jacked for 30 years. I'm like, if it was that easy, we would have figured it out.
Exactly. So it's really a fun thing to hear that. But at the end of the day, the bodybuilding community is so tapped in to how to transform your body in a way that everybody needs to take advantage of. And I know when you go into the gym and you see that world-class bodybuilder training the soccer mom by then has learned of all what a resource that bodybuilder can be, because those athletes have spent their entire life understanding the cause and effect of nutrition, nutritional strategies, nutritional mistakes, how to train, how not to train, when to train. And so, if the average person out there can really stop and appreciate, you know, the resource that is a world-class bikini bodybuilder, physique, fitness athlete, then you've really made the job a whole lot easier on yourself. And, you know, we always try to, that's always the message that we try to tell is don't say, I don't want to train with him because I don't want to look like him. That might be the most absurd statement that anybody ever makes.
Well, yeah. What was Arnold's, where people are like, oh, I'd never want to look like you. And he's like, good, you never will.
You never will. Right.
Dude. Arnold has so many good one-liners, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I want to stick with the Olympia and the experience. And when you attended it, it was a weekend. And then now with your mission, your goal is to expand this into a year-round event. So speak to us about that aim and your mission currently with the Olympia.
Well, you know, when I took the position, and I appreciate you saying that, because when I took the position, I realized quickly that the event was being treated like a 4 or 5 day event. And what I've always felt is the word Olympia, the Olympia logo, what the Olympia represents in physical culture, it is the preeminent badge of honor in the world of physique and transformation. The Olympia represents something that is so meaningful that I realized quickly that companies and brands around the world wanted to be Olympia approved. They wanted to be able to bear the name Olympia on their products. And then I realized quickly that the Olympia is it's a mindset. It represents something far bigger than a gold medal around somebody's neck one night or two nights of the year. So we've really taken that approach with everything that we do with our licensing program. We have 12 Olympia amateur events that are held in countries around the world. When we do our part to really capitalize on just what the Olympia means to people, it's a really meaningful thing as you travel the world and you realize what the Olympia means to people. It's a bucket list experience when somebody shows up at the event and they're overrun by emotion just by having arrived at the Olympia. I would imagine it would be much the same way a lifelong baseball fan attending his first game 7 of a World Series or an NFL football fan going to the Super Bowl for the first time. These are really special things. So I really try to just tap into what the Olympia represents and what it means for everybody in very different ways. And that's what that process has been like. So we try to utilize our media. We own and operate a portfolio of media assets that includes the iconic Muscle and Fitness magazine and the Flex brand and Muscle and Fitness Hers and a handful of other media assets. So we try to make the Olympia part of the day-to-day, week-to-week, year-round story. And that's been primarily the difference. It's not just a countdown towards an event. It's an overall storyline. And that's how we've approached it.
Can you discuss a little bit about the growth outside the United States? I mean, I feel like anytime I see any of the pictures from the expos in India and the Middle East, like they look absolutely insane. I didn't realize the bodybuilding culture that was in India. One of the guys we train his parents are from Iran. And now that since our phones are closely linked, you know, because it's in proximity, I've been getting a whole bunch of like more like Middle Eastern, like judo, wrestling, bodybuilding type stuff. And I always blame it. I'm like, what is this on my phone? And he's like, dude, check it out. I had no idea the bodybuilding culture in India. Like that feels like such an amazing market of individuals that are like, it just kind of shocking to see that it's grown so big.
It's enormous. I think in the U.S., because there is so much abundance in the U.S. in terms of things that we get to do, we get to see, combined with social media and all that, it's, you know, a Mr. Olympia can walk down the street and it's not going to stop traffic in Vegas the same way it would stop traffic in other parts of the world. And I think we find that when you venture out this past weekend in Germany, there's a big fitness event called FIBO. And the FIBO Expo, the big fitness trade show, it's bigger than anything we have here in the U.S. by a lot. And you go to these other countries where we've had champions in parts of the Middle East, throughout Asia, throughout Europe, down in Brazil, throughout Latin America, the list goes on. It's very, very, very popular. And there are countries where bodybuilding and fitness, along with like soccer, are the two most popular sports in that region. So, it's really cool. And all you need to do is, you know, I hate to say it, but you follow the dollars, right? You look at a lot of these sports, nutrition, and supplement brands, and a lot of them aren't even focusing on the U.S. anymore. They're focusing on other places in the other continents because they're realizing that the impact that the ROI that their marketing dollars can yield is far greater than it can in the U.S. So, I would say that those of us in the U.S. might be a little jaded to discover that, as you mentioned, around the world, the fitness lifestyle, physique competition, bodybuilding, we have countries that have made significant offers to us to bring our event over to their part of the world. And we have, you know, we're always open to all of it. We like being in the U.S. It makes sense for us strategically, logistically. The growth around the world has been very gratifying to see.
Yeah, my dad traveled to Dubai for work, and he's still into the gym and active. So he went to the world's biggest, according to him again, the world's biggest bodybuilding gym.
In Dubai.
It's in Dubai? Yeah. Okay. So story checks out. Yeah. But he was showing me pictures, and he was blown away just seeing it all in person. Not only just the size and the equipment and just rows of machines, but then the dudes. Yeah. So like I was trying to zoom in from these pictures to see like how big these dudes were. It was awesome.
Yeah. Where is it? In the Emirates, where like Big Ramy and all those guys train? There's some like bodybuilding gym.
Yeah. There's a series of gyms out there called Oxygen Gym.
That's
and, some of those facilities are jaw dropping. I haven't had a chance to visit them, but I have seen the images. We've sent folks over there. We've done photo shoots. We've had people over there train. And it is extraordinary the investments that they make over in that part of the world and how far they are willing to go to provide resources to the people who live in those parts of the world. Because there was a long time where you almost had to come to the U.S. to get the best equipment, the best nutrition, the best supplements. But the good news is for people who live in other parts of the world is the rest of the world is starting to catch up and in certain areas are even surpassing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've had, what, two champions, Big Remy from Egypt and then Hadi, what is it?
Hadi Chupan, the wolf? He's a reigning champion.
What's his nickname? Like the Iranian wolf?
The wolf. The Persian wolf from Iran.
Yeah, the Persian wolf. Yeah, no, and I do you remember there's a picture with Brian Shaw coming out and handing those guys awards, and like they look like they could like basically fit in his pocket, you know, because Brian's what, like 6'8"? I mean, and what are those guys, like 5'4"? So it's really funny to see the progress. Yeah. Like his, you know, they're all standing up on stage. And I didn't really realize how small some of the competitors were until we were, you know, obviously Hack hooked us up and we were walking through, and I think I was standing next to one of the heavyweights, Nick something.
Nick's a big boy. Nick was top three at the Olympia.
Yeah. What's his last name? Nick.
So he's actually, it's fun. Nick Walker. So Nick is somebody. Nick is somebody who's really made a big run this year, but I would imagine that Brian Shaw makes just about anybody look like a Madden's car, right?
I'm 6'6", so when I walked by and Nick was standing right next, Nick Walker, he was standing right next to me, and he was like, right, like kind of like here, and I like looked down and I saw him, and I like he was as wide as he was tall. I mean, just the physical impressiveness. But to this day, the most physically impressive people we saw were the health and wellness girls. They almost looked like a half horse, half human. Like I couldn't believe, like it was insane.
The wellness division is interesting because most people, especially if you see a top level wellness competitor, like an Olympia caliber wellness competitor, their proportions and their structure are eye popping. Like they're unlike anything you've ever seen in your life. There's, look, we've all seen beautiful bikini models or bodybuilders, and we understand what that looks like. But a wellness, a female wellness competitor, with their, you know, with their thick, you know, lower, thicker, I guess you could say thicker lower half, right?
Yeah.
It's just, it's something that until you see it, you can't believe it. Yeah. And that's the one cool thing about all of this, though. The truth is, you know, you go to an Olympia, you go to Olympia weekend, and you see the best in the world walk out there. And or you're up close to one of them at the expo and you get to meet them and take pictures with them and all that. You think you know what it is. You think you have an idea until you're up close and you see it with your own eyes, or you touch that dense granite structure, and it's hard to put into words. I'm a word guy, and I don't have the words to describe what it's like, especially the first time, to see that caliber of shape, musculature, proportion. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. So I'd say if anybody wants to get out there and experience something unique, go to a high level bodybuilding competition. The Olympia is a great example, or you can find something more local, and it's something that will affect you in ways that you might not be prepared for.
I tell everybody they should go at least once. The people watching and the people that showed up were like I couldn't believe it.
Dan, you say that's a small event. Yeah. And that it was massive.
Yeah, it was massive. Like there were the wellness girl that we saw that kind of like made me like what's going on here was the Puerto Rico, or I think she's from Puerto Rico, Yarnisha.
Oh, Yarishna.
Yarishna. Yeah. Yeah. And she had like hundreds of people that had these shirts that were like her airbrushed on them that like all of a sudden they had like Puerto Rican flags that these people were absolutely going crazy for. And I'm like, I they're ready to start a riot. And then she came walking out and I'm like, I don't even know how you get your body to look like that, but like, do you remember her?
People were running through the, like the walkways, the aisles to like, just get as close as picture as they could.
It was like her, you know, and I know she didn't win. I think she finished top something, but in terms of like crowd participation, like causing a riot, like I didn't see anything like that and anybody else.
Yeah, no, she's something. Yeah, there's a lot of athletes in that division. And by the way, it's not all just airbrush. You have fans that have these competitors tattooed on their bodies, the kind of tattoos that don't go away. So it's a very passionate, devoted, ultra loyal fan base. And that's one of the things that makes it really fun, because for some reason, everybody connects in ways that you can't even sometimes explain. I know you had Jay Cutler on your show at one time, and he's another great example. There's so many people whose lives have been changed by Jay. They look to Jay and they connect with his story, his message, his blue collar approach. That's the cool thing about it. Cause you know, I always wonder, what is it that makes one bodybuilder more compelling than another? Cause look, they get on stage, they're hitting the same shots. They look similar, but each of them has a story. Each of them are from someplace, and it creates a relatability or some connection point. And it's really fun to see the way people find their favorites and just really own it.
Yeah, no, I Jay's an incredible ambassador for not only the sport as a former champion, but in it. Like he's got it was funny. He came on the podcast, and I think it was one of his first podcasts. He was getting ready to start his own. So I think at first he was like, who are these guys? And then like, you know, 10 minutes into it, after we got him laughing a little bit, all of a sudden he opened up and he's like, okay, these guys aren't going to try to get me in some "I gotcha" moment, and got into the training stuff. And I think he's still an incredible ambassador and has a good personality that I think that's what people resonate with. Like, I don't think they want just the, you know, blank stare individual who's got no personality. They want to know like there's intelligence and warmth and, you know, something going on behind the eyes.
Yeah. They want authenticity. They want to feel that there's something real, that, you know, that, you know, in some way, shape or form, we're all broken and we all have things that we deal with. And the top bodybuilders in the world are, not only are they not an exception, they're probably the best example, because most of them, in order to get on a journey where you're willing to suffer and sacrifice the way these look, every sport, and I mean every sport, you go to practice, you train, you go home, you live your life for the most part. Bodybuilding is unique. It is truly a 24/7 discipline. Every ounce of your day, from rest to nutrition to training to even the choices that you make socially, relationships wise, it all ties back to your love of your craft in bodybuilding. So it's really an intense thing to see the way people, how far people are willing to go. And that's what makes bodybuilding unlike any other discipline in the world, is just how far you have to dig in to be successful. That's why I always say you don't want to, it's okay if you don't want to look like them. It's okay if you don't want to emulate them, but respect the passion, respect the dedication, the discipline, the devotion, because I always find that the people who are most critical of the world-class bodybuilder are the people who maybe haven't had the courage to commit to anything at that level. And if you understand true conviction and commitment and passion and devotion and discipline and all that stuff, you can't help but just be in awe over the lifestyle of a world-class bodybuilder. It's extraordinary.
So what's the goal 5-10 years out for the Mr. Olympia and the brand, and you know where you guys are headed?
Yeah, the goal is just, it's just like any other industry. It's just constant growth. It's constant connecting to new audiences. It's constant figuring out ways to create more relatability to what we do, to be less of a niche sport. It's helping brands and companies utilize our audiences and our participants to achieve their own success. There isn't some end goal here. It's just making sure that we do our part to take the very rare genetic gifts that live in the bodybuilding and fitness industry and use them to provide positivity, whether it's lifting up a child who's sitting there in the hospital dealing with something real and having a real life superhero walk into his or her hospital room and lift them up and put a smile on their face, or whether it's, you know, getting booked on the Jimmy Fallon show and being able to speak to millions at a time about this lifestyle and about fitness and getting people out there who are on the fence as to whether or not to join a gym or change their lives or lose the kind of weight that they need to lose to live a longer life so they can dance at their daughter's wedding and do all that sort of thing. We just want to make sure that we are taking full advantage of the resources that comprise the bodybuilding and fitness community. And those resources, first and foremost, are men and women who really set the standard when it comes to devotion and dedication. And sometimes it frustrates me when people don't stop and take the time to process it that way. But then I realize it's our job. To some degree, it's my job to make sure that that message is sent out and the stories do resonate, because if we're not doing our part to get that message out there, to get people to see it the way they need to see it, well, then we have failed internally. So that's on us.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
And your audience is always expanding, and then people are always entering the gym for the first time. Do you have any guidance for future bodybuilders? Because they can get discouraged once they realize the amount of commitment, work, nutrition, diet, sleep, everything that's involved from getting from where they are as an amateur to the stage as a pro and getting their pro card. So what guidance do you have for these future guys and girls not to get discouraged and continue their journey?
Yeah, that's easy. Don't forget your why. There's a reason why everybody steps into the gym for the first time, whether or not you were trying to overcome a health issue. Maybe you have an obesity issue. Maybe you were bullied as a kid. Maybe you just are at a place where you need to connect to some level of dedication and discipline. Whatever it is, there's a reason why somebody picks up a weight for the first time. And you need to always stay connected to that reason. That's your source. That's your why. Because if you don't, along the way, you will be discouraged. People will tell you on social media that you don't look good enough. Your friends will tell you that you're crazy. Your girlfriend, your boyfriend will tell you that you've lost your mind for devoting yourself to this lifestyle. And there's going to be a lot of things that are going to work their hardest to stop you from pursuing this lifestyle or from pursuing this passion. So my advice is that when you are in those places, don't focus on what the judges think of you if you decide to compete. Don't focus on what your friends or neighbors may or may not think about you, because they don't have the courage to do it themselves, or they don't have the desire to do it themselves, or they're just not interested in doing it themselves. That's okay. Everybody has to make their own choices, and that's fine. This lifestyle is not for everybody, but you're going to be met with so much along the way that's going to do their best to threaten your path and your passion and your desire to achieve certain goals, whatever those goals are. So make sure you never lose touch with the reason why you started. And if you're able to do that, you'll get to wherever you're trying to get to, because the people who end up quitting are the people that get caught up in all the bullshit. And in doing so, their dreams end up making a crash landing because they allowed the background noise to defeat them. And if you're focused on your why and you always stay connected to that place, that background noise won't even hinder you. And that's my advice to anybody who's on that journey, because there's a lot of people that are going to tell you that you're nuts.
I'm fascinated on the judging part. You know, like these athletes go up and I mean, everybody looks phenomenal. They're all in shape. I mean, everybody's ready for the day. Yep. I'm really fascinated in like the standards and how the judges decide, like, this individual, was it improvement here? It feels like, as a spectator, I assume that, I mean, there were people in the crowd that obviously were fucking into it and they knew exactly this guy has lats are down. But I mean, like, for the layman's looking at it, I'm like, all these dudes are fucking jacked. How do you decide between one and the other?
Very difficult. It's extremely difficult, especially in certain divisions, like the women's bikini division. You look at the winner and then you look at a ninth place finisher. You could almost swap them. And like you said, the layman would not know the difference, especially since a lot of times the criteria or the standard will change as we go. There might be a year where they might say, we're looking for a slightly fuller, more aesthetic look. And then, oh, we're looking for a slightly more conditioned look. So it becomes very challenging to get the layman to really understand. And some people have said that's been one of the challenges for bodybuilding's popularity, is that when people watch it, if they haven't seen 100 bodybuilding contests, they have a hard time getting their arms around what they're really looking at, you know, because then you could hear a real high level esoteric explanation of a physique. People start talking about how the hamstrings insert into the glutes. And then you start getting to this very granular analysis of a physique. And the average person obviously cannot do that. Just like the average person can't do X's and O's on a basketball court and create a game plan. Like, it's a very specific thing that takes years to hone. So it is challenging. But I always say, don't get too wrapped up in it, because have your favorites, find the physique or the personality or the overall body type that you relate to. And also, and I know this isn't directly what you asked, but a lot of times people will look at a physique and they'll say, I want to create that physique, for myself. And that's also, a cautionary tale, because all of our physiques, structurally, genetically, we are predisposed to certain types of flow and certain types of body types. So it's important that you try to maximize and become the best version of what your God-given genetics are going to allow you to do. But as far as breaking down a competition or a judging criteria, that's probably not a talk show. That's probably about a 50-hour seminar that we would have to do to really get into it. And I wouldn't be the one to teach it, because that's not really where I'm at, to be honest.
So are the judges former bodybuilders, or do they come up? I mean, is there kind of a judging track? Yeah. Like, okay. So these guys, like, this is what they do.
Oh yeah. And they're great at it. The IFBB Professional League, which is the organization that sanctions the Olympia, the NPC, which is the largest amateur bodybuilding physique organization in the world. These organizations have pretty arduous processes by which they train and test judge, and a lot of them are former athletes, high level trainers, people that know physiques, know how to break them down. And the judging process also, in and of itself, inherently has ways to preserve integrity, where high scores and low scores are automatically dropped by the computer. So if a judge is at the table and he overappreciates or underappreciates a particular physique, that's not going to enter into the equation. That will be thrown out. So there's a lot of measures that are put into place to make sure that the integrity and the standards of the judging are there. But yeah, a lot of years go into the process of getting elevated to a high level judge.
Wow. Future for you, high level judge.
Well, Well, I'm always judging. Look at the baby. Look at the baby.
Hey, we're right. We're all judging, right? You might as well get paid for it.
It's a fascinating deal. Like when we were sitting there, they started calling people out. Like we were in the stage and like people were screaming, cheering. And I'm like, God damn, like these people are into this shit.
It's like, it was like a rock show.
It was like going to an NFL game. I played in Philly before they blew up the Veterans Stadium. It reminded me of like the 700 level, like the Philly people, like just going fucking nuts. Yeah. And like the t-shirts and all that. It was wild. Yeah. It was neat to see.
Well, you know, I have a question for you guys. If that's okay. You know, I wonder, cause you guys do such a good job of communicating every day or every week to audiences that are in all parts of fitness and athletics and all that. Do you guys get a sense that the bodybuilding world is starting to impact these other disciplines, these other growing sports that are starting to, that have obviously been around for a long time? Are you seeing the bodybuilding influence among the athletes that you're talking to?
You know, where I see the bodybuilding influence is with the explosion of social media. The greatest flex in the world, and I'm working on a blog post about this, isn't a Lambo. It's to be in phenomenal shape, because you can't go buy it. I mean, I guess you can to some extent, but it still takes hard work. It takes dedication. You just don't magically walk in and, you know, somebody hands you, maybe, I don't know, you go to a doctor and he gives you something. Like, it's not like this happens overnight. So I think like the greatest flex isn't a Lamborghini or a house or all these fucking possessions. It's having a type of physique or a body that people want to emulate. And when you take your shirt off, it stops traffic. Like, to me, that is, I think, a great flex. And especially on social media, like the optics of that have become almost more impressive. I know, like when I played in the NFL, you got to basically wear white spandex in front of millions of people every Sunday. So I wanted to be in shape. We tailored our jerseys, wanted to make sure my arms look good on TV. Like, that was always important. So you got to know a little bit of bodybuilding. And, I never wanted to have a big gut hangout, but I also know that the more muscle I could carry, the more, insulin sensitive, the greater I recovered. Fat's extremely oxidative. So I was always in this constant battle of like avoiding a ton of body fat. But like all of a sudden I got voted one of Philadelphia's best looking people, Dymatize and all these people wanted to put me on magazine stuff. And it was interesting that like a good physique and like being in healthy and being in shape, like it's something people emulate for. When I see, Lambos and houses and yachts and all that, I just think like, fuck, dude, somebody's got to manage all that. That looks like a lot of stress. So, going to the gym, being in good shape, exercising, getting, whatever your fitness passion is. Being in shape, I think, is an incredible flex. So I see that for the general population, especially like this interesting demographic that we've kind of attached to, which is really just like guys that train in their garage that, don't want to necessarily go to a gym because they have a, job, a wife, and kids. And so they park their cars in the street and buy a whole bunch of, Rogue and, Sornex type equipment and throw it in their garage and just want to be jacked and in good shape so that they can go on vacation and do cool shit or, go out and cut down trees or do whatever. So this idea of like training to like have the best version of your life in front of you, where like sickness, illness, weakness aren't your limiting factors. Like I'd like to create an army of just badass dudes that can kick the doors off the shit or off the hinges at any point. And that's what the training's designed to do. A good physique is a good like receipt for that you've done the work, that you're eating well, that you're doing these things, you're sleeping. I know when I look at let's say we're bringing athletes and look at them and excess body fat around the waist, I mean, extremely, high cortisol, a lot of stress. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it, but I think the advent of social media has made it more attainable. Before social media, you saw the bodybuilding magazines, and it wasn't until I saw these people in person where I was like, holy shit, dude. Like, this is something that like is like meant to be. Like I know how to get over to that deal. And I just think that for me as an athlete, it was kind of prevalent because we were in the training environment. And then when I, obviously we trained, I trained in an old powerlifter's garage in high school. And then on Saturdays, we would drive to Venice Gold's. And, you know, I grew up in Torrance, Palos Verdes area, if you know, Southern California. And my training partner always like, dude, we got to go to the Venice Golds. And we would go there and like, you know, it was neat to see these people in person because it became more attainable. So I think for us, like we had to get in the car, whereas now you can kind of see it on social media and maybe it's become more attainable or people now all of a sudden have a vehicle to make it happen. Does that make sense?
Not only does it make sense, I couldn't have dreamt of a better response or answer to that question. So I appreciate you saying all that. No, it's been really exciting to see more and more people get on board with that message. And it's a testament to what you guys are doing here at the Power Athlete Podcast. I mean, it really is the core of what we're trying to communicate each and every day. And I'm actually going to have one of my editors at Muscle and Fitness reach out to you. This is the type of thing that we normally talk about off the air, but I'm going to do it because these are the stories that we like to tell at Muscle and Fitness, and just how people have built the bridge to elite level athletic performance to kind of carrying that forward into their life and allowing them to continue spreading that message and that positivity and helping people achieve those goals. So no, I love what you guys are doing, and I really appreciate you guys having me here. I'm hoping that this November you guys will make the trip to Orlando, Florida and experience Olympia weekend in a big way. We're going to have a whole bunch of celebrities there and it's going to be a great experience. So we're hoping you guys can be a part of it.
Yeah, man. We'd love to. Yeah. It was an incredible experience. Yeah. So we've been training some professional Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys Friday is always like our strongman kind of bodybuilding day. And invariably the day's not complete without them posing. So they'll always take the shirts off and like pose and like, I'll get some pictures and I'll send them to them and they're always super excited. But like, I think it's receipts, man. Like people want to work hard and they want to see the receipt for their hard work. And just so happens being in shape and having muscles is a pretty good receipt. You know, probably a lot better than the stress of having to pay off a Lambo or, you know, a 200-foot yacht. So,
I always say that, look, I'm at the point of my life where I train purely and completely for stress management. I train because it tends to make my blood work look better and all the ways that matter. The fact that training also puts muscle and provides some optic or aesthetic value, that is purely a bonus. And I mean that sincerely. I like you guys, I work real hard. I have a stressful job and, training is a vital part of survival, to be completely honest with you. So, to me, working out will always be a part of my life, not because it's a passion, but because it's a necessity. And that happens to also merge into the world of passion as well for me personally. So yeah, the fact that it helps fill my shirt sleeves and all that good stuff, that's cool. That's a bonus. That's fun. But that's not what matters. What matters is really what it's doing to keep me feeling young, keep my brain working, and keep my energy up.
Awesome.
And that's the majority of our audience and our clients and our athletes that we have. That's their journey. They used to play football, be collegiate athletes, and they still want to train in that style. We'll still get the aesthetic benefits, the health benefits, and everything. So it's one of our most popular training programs called Jack Street. So it takes a bodybuilding style, but then still includes athletic movement.
Yeah.
So you're able to maintain your ability to move through space, much like the fitness athletes on stage. I thought that was my favorite for the female.
Oh, when the girls are doing all the flips and the crazy shit.
Madness.
Yeah. That was, you know, there's always like kind of, I guess people always take shots on the bodybuilders, like, oh, they're standing up there and posing and, you know, like, while they're not, you know, fighting somebody or doing that, like the physical control that it takes to work, it's still like, requires athleticism. And most of the dudes are former athletes. So, I mean, it's a lot of attention to detail, dude. I having dieted like that before on a few occasions, it's nothing that I wish on my worst enemy. Like at least for me, I had to go to bed hungry and wake up hungry. And I was hungry all the time.
Go to bed hungry?
Yeah. Go to bed hungry or bread hungry?
You said bread. You're already thinking.
I'm already thinking about it. Yeah. But it's tough. But I was thinking for you having to stand on stage and talk to all these dudes, you're like, shit, man, I better be in shape, dude. These guys are going to eat me up if I'm not.
Yeah. Look, I try to utilize those athletes the way I expect all of our fans to. And that is to just find inspiration and motivation from them. And I get to talk to them every day. And I've really discovered that the average, there's nothing average about them, but the average, just to use the word, world-class physique athlete, bodybuilder, bikini athlete. They're smart. They're smart, really smart. They understand physiology. They understand the anatomy. They understand transformation. They understand all the strategies that come with that. You can't build something like that and be stupid. You cannot. So that's another thing that a lot of times people ask me, what's the one misnomer? What's the one misconception? And I always say, if you think folks in this industry aren't smart, then you're a fool for thinking that, because the folks that have dedicated their lives transforming themselves, they have done so not just with dedication and passion, but also with knowledge. And there's a lot of that in this space. But no, generally speaking, you know, the Olympia in muscle and fitness is really appreciating the global growth and the surge of popularity in this, in the fitness discipline. We're loving it. We're loving that Hollywood movie studios count on us to promote their movie projects. We love that companies outside of those endemic brands. We always say the endemic brands in our world are sports nutrition, supplementation, equipment, and apparel. And we'll always have a connection to those brands, but we're starting to see more and more companies outside of those categories want to come into our space and connect with our audiences. And that's been a real validator for us, because there was a time when those companies wouldn't even take our calls.
Well, I feel like there was a huge divergence in Hollywood. I mean, like, obviously you had like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and like Stallone and kind of these action figures. And, you know, I felt like it was kind of this. And then all of a sudden the movie 300 came out. And that was like, I just remember like an atom bomb being dropped on Hollywood. Now it's like,
because Gerard Butler's acting.
Well, just the fact that the I didn't know that the Spartans actually were English, and they all had English accents, but
Scottish.
That was, or Scottish, whatever, somewhere from the UK. But like I remember seeing the movie 300, and like you know at that point when you saw superheroes and you know like Christopher Reeves and this, I mean it was you know, and maybe you know Rocky 3 or Commando, like Schwarzenegger, Conan, which actually I just watched with my son the other day. He had never seen Conan the Barbarian, and I was like, well, you're 7, time to see Conan the Barbarian. But like when that movie 300 dropped, like that changed, like now there isn't a single leading man in like a Hollywood movie that isn't fucking on point. Right. You know, whether it be, you know, Superman or all the Marvel movies or DC, I mean, it's like every dude is in shape, even the guy that's on the, farmer's commercial with the, you know, the older guy on the farmer's commercial. I saw him in a movie, that dude shredded. And he's like, do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The old guy, like, I can't remember his name, I'm gonna butcher it, but I mean, like everybody's in shape. So it wasn't that way. And then after, seems like after the movie 300, like Hollywood get on board and he's like, I guess everybody's got to have abs and be shredded.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool, right? To see it all. And, I think to some degree, it's also created a nice collaborative energy, and where I find myself getting phone calls all the time from, all sorts of the most unexpected places that want to collaborate and discuss how our worlds can merge together. And that's so important. I know, you know, Joe Weider, the founder of all of this, you know, I think back as we made this movie about him, and people thought this was all nuts and there were no gyms back then. There was none of this. And in this July 1950 edition of a magazine called Your Physique, which is one of his first magazines, he did his predictions, which is the Joe Weider predictions. I predict that physical culture will never be the same, that kind of thing. And how bodybuilding will influence the world. And all of his predictions at the time in that context seemed absurd. But now you go through them one by one, and everything that he had dreamt or hoped would occur as it relates to muscle and strength and fitness and physique transformation and all of that, everything was spot on. And we're just seeing the way this lifestyle has infiltrated really all corners of the world in every way possible. And that's it doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
That's badass.
I also want to thank TikTok for the resurgence of training legs with my current high school athletes, because Jay Cutler's quad stomp made its way onto TikTok, and yeah, Jay himself made it onto TikTok.
Yeah.
And so finally these noodle leg kids
All want huge quads.
So they're doing the quad stomp, and I can't help but make fun of them, but then provide guidance and solutions for their pasty, skinny, weak legs.
Yeah. And also to kind of jump off of that, the strongest legs in most gyms these days are the legs that are attached to women. And you see some of the movements and some of the weight that women are pushing these days. I don't know. And I think that's also a social media reality, right? And it's a social media influence rather. You see these women getting under these leg presses and sticking 6, 7, 8, 9 plates on each side and pressing them like the same way freaking Dorian Yates used to press them. It was really, it's really something to see how strong women have gotten. And it's a really testament to just how advanced training has gotten, how dedicated they've become, because women are some of the hardest workers, if not the hardest workers in the gym.
Well, the I call it the 4 minute mile deal. Like, once, you know, remember the 4 minute mile was impossible to break, and then the guy breaks the 4 minute mile, and then within like weeks, everybody broke the 4 minute mile. Yep. I think what happened with social media, and I go back to, like, you know, when we were training in high school, I didn't know that anybody could bench 500 pounds. And then all of a sudden I saw, like, you know, Bill Kazmaier and like World's Strongest Man. I went to college and there was a dude that benched 500, and like all of a sudden you see people do it and you're like, holy shit, this is attainable. Yeah. And I think with social media now, you see people doing it and be like, well, that person can do it, I can do it. So I really think we're in this like kind of 4 minute mile deal where now all of a sudden you're seeing it happen over and over again. And it's like, it's not this like mythical thing. It's really something that's, you know, if can be attainable. And I mean, it's, yeah, it just feels like social media has added so much more access, so much more, I mean, negative and good, you know, kind of balance, but just the information exchange, it's been incredible.
Yeah. It's always nice to hear that some positive is coming out of that whole social media thing, right?
Because did you hear about the kid, the TikTok challenge where you take 12 to 14 Benadryl and then you hallucinate? So this kid did it on a TikTok challenge, and they basically brain dead, killed him dead. He took 14 Benadryl, pretty much went into, slipped into a coma, and they had to unplug him. So they were talking about like this dangerous TikTok challenge of popping, I was like,
allergies.
And the parents were like, you know, our mission is to shut down TikTok. I'm like, oh my God, dude. I mean, but like, isn't that where the Tide Pod eating thing started too, was on TikTok?
I'm not 100% sure, but that's also stupid.
Yeah. Eating Tide Pods.
I thought that was Darwinism.
I think, are people just making these things up to see if people will do them? Probably. It seems
that way sometimes. Somebody will throw an idea out there that's so ridiculous that will create the trend in and of itself. I don't know what's going on out there. I do know that I am not a huge fan of social media, but I recognize that whether I'm a fan of it or not is completely irrelevant. Nobody cares because it's far bigger than me times a million. So it doesn't make a difference what I think.
How old are you? Like, what year were you born?
I just turned 50.
Okay. Yeah. So we're of a similar generation where I look at like this level of sharing as uncomfortable, that like, I don't, you know, yeah, like you're like, this feels like a lot of people that I don't know, knowing a lot about me, which is like a daily like struggle where you're like, I don't know if I want to share this much with these people.
Yeah.
So I'm sure in that same way, you're like,
and it's not even just that, not only do I not want to share that much with people, but I don't want to know that much about you. I don't want to know that much about my friends.
Unless we go to dinner in November, and then I want to know everything. Like, if I can't sit down to dinner with you, then like, I don't want to plug in. And then like, I don't want to know what my neighbors are thinking. Like, it's just, it's too much.
That's right. Cause the more we know about people, the less we like them. So it's better to just have surface information. That seems to be the trend, at least for me. But social media is tough. But yeah, that is one of the good things that has come of it. I'm glad we were able to spotlight that, because a lot of people are in the shape of their lives because of the things that they are consuming and they're getting from social media.
I see a WWE chair behind you. I mean, who's your favorite wrestler of all time? Because those dudes are like athletic bodybuilders. It's amazing to see the feats that they are able to accomplish.
Yeah, so we've been very fortunate in the bodybuilding world to have built sort of a natural relationship with the WWE to some extent. It's no secret that guys like Triple H will attend our events. And his wife, Stephanie, she's also been, she was at the Olympia a few years ago, actually getting inducted.
Yeah, the same one. So we attended that ceremony with Hack and got to meet her.
Yeah. And she's wonderful. And I guess they just struck gold, right? They're all not that they weren't already rich, but I guess what was it, a $9.87 billion deal?
Yeah, with it's not the Fertitta brothers, is it, that still own? Did they sell the UFC to the bigger group?
Yeah, I think it was Endeavor. I think
yeah.
It was
the, so they're basically coming together to create like the Voltron of fucking right, fight battle media. Yeah, it's
that's
fucking
a,
crazy.
That's a great path. Once you essentially burn out from the UFC just through circumstance.
Well, that's what Ronda Rousey did.
Yes, we have an opportunity for you over here to
yep.
to act.
No, did you see the Cavender girls who play basketball for Miami?
They're going to be WWE.
They're basically foregoing their last year of college because I guess they got into some NCAA,
NXT.
NIL kind of shadiness, and they're like, "Peace out, we're out," and they're going to the WWE. When I saw that, and they, because I guess they were in like the WWE does these like camps to kind of like bring in influencers.
NXT, yeah.
Yeah. And so they're going
to. Sean Hayes, strength coach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's still with him, but he's a man.
Yeah.
Well, back to the question. Who's your favorite wrestler? And I mean,
it would have to be Triple H. It's funny because I'm not really that tuned into the wrestling world, other than I've enjoyed the relationship to some extent with the leadership over there at the WWE, and I've always appreciated their support of what we do. Sort of led by Triple H and Dave Bautista. Dave Bautista has become a very good friend of the Olympia. We see him a lot, and now he's kicking ass, making movies. He's a leading man in the movies now, and he's doing great. Big projects. So those are the guys that I always gravitate to. I don't really know a lot of the new stuff. I know we had Roman Reigns on our cover of Muscle and Fitness a while back, but the WWE is a lot of fun. And I'm glad you were at that Hall of Fame induction, because Stephanie's speech, I was there as well. Stephanie's, I'm on that board, and Stephanie's speech was wonderful, wasn't it? I mean, she's a very, very impressive powerhouse businesswoman. And I'm just so proud of all the success that they've had. And there's also a nice connection on some level with the UFC, not as much as with the WWE, but I think all of these organizations, there's a respect for each other, because most of these fighters, they train with pro bodybuilders, and, you know, they're all sort of tied to each other in some ancillary way. So it's pretty cool the way this to see the mutual respect that exists between a wrestler or a mixed martial artist or a bodybuilder. You know, they all kind of understand the passion and the dedication, and they kind of share that.
Who's your favorite, Chris?
Of all time?
Mm-hmm.
Probably The Rock, just because, but I mean, he's accomplished so damn much.
Yeah.
And his story, like, to get to that point.
I have two funny stories. One, The Rock used to come train with us in Philly, because Tom Kennedy, who was our assistant strength coach, was also a strength coach at Miami. Mm-hmm. So whenever he was in Philly, he'd always come lift weights with us and was always super friendly, gave us tickets. So I got to sing ringside. And then when I lived down in Tampa, Florida, I lived in Clearwater Beach, and I was driving across the causeway, if you know the area. And all of a sudden I'm getting tailgated by a dude in a Viper. And I'm like, this fucking asshole. And so all of a sudden he shoots out around me into the side lane and drives by me, mean mugging me. And it's fucking Hulk Hogan in a Viper with the NWO Hulk Hogan with like the do-rag and like the bleach blonde beard and the whole deal. And I'm like, holy shit. And then we drag, and I just fucking punched it and took off. I had a twin turbo Porsche and I blew his fucking doors off. But and so I got to drag race Hulk Hogan, who was trying to illegally pass me.
First time I'm hearing this.
You never heard this one? Oh, dude, it's one of my favorite ones.
The best part of stories like that is when Hogan, who's also another guy who comes around our events from time to time, he lives in Florida now. When Hogan did that to you, little did he know the gift that he was giving you to be able to tell that story for the rest of your life. Right?
Well, just the fact that he was driving a Viper, which I thought was hilarious, and he was in like the full outfit. I just thought to myself, is this how he rolls around, or he just throws it on to go out and punk people in the cars to be like, you know, like it was pretty fucking amazing. I pulled into training. I'm like, you guys are never going to believe I just drag race Hulk Hogan. And they were like, no fucking way. And then
that's like the story of Bill Murray who
taking like the fry. And then
nobody's going to believe you.
And then it was something like, I want to say like a month later on TV, there was that Bubba the Love Sponge guy that was, he was a DJ. He and Hogan got into the deal where I think he banged his wife. But long story short, he was on like some event with him, and it legitimately, he had a Viper in the outfit. And they were like, holy shit, dude, you weren't full of shit. I'm like, I fucking told you. So my favorite wrestler of all time is Ric Flair. I think Ric Flair is the most hilarious, like his original Like when he would get up and do the promos was so good. I mean, him and the Ultimate Warrior, like that type of stuff. Like that's what I remember for wrestling. So I love Ric Flair. I think he's the best.
It really is amazing the product that Vince and their family have created. I attended an event not too long ago, a local event here in South Florida. And just to see the way grown men or young children, all in between, the way they invest in these characters, the way they boo and cheer for them, there's no concern for the fact that it's a performance. Once you're in game mode and the event starts, whoever's bought a ticket, they buy in, they are all in. And you know how hard that is to do in the cynical world that we live in today, where everybody's looking for that proof that something is fake, or everybody's looking for reasons to not buy into something, or they're looking for proof that something is lip synced, or that's the world we live in now. It's a very cynical, skeptical world. The fact that the WWE, despite the fact that it is widely known that it is choreographed and scripted environment, it doesn't matter. They still are as popular as ever. They'll still sell out stadiums for WrestleMania. And I think it is a remarkable achievement what they've built.
Well, I mean, just the athleticism, like these dudes are like leaping off things. I mean, they're really like, it's fake in that it's scripted, I guess, but like the physicality is not. Sure. Like, I mean, like I saw when we were there, this dude got thrown out of the ring and like landed on his back. And I was like, oh, that guy just broke his back.
Yeah. Like if I'm watching John Wick or action movies and there's things going down, I'm still engaged, but I know that that's some trickery. But then if I'm watching WWE highlights, I know, even though it's a soap opera, the movement is real. Those dudes are, it's not.
It's real. When you watch John Wick, you're probably watching the 30th take when you see the film. These guys are doing it all in the first take. It's impressive. Yeah.
No, I mean, and their longevity, The Undertaker lives around the corner from us. And so he, Mark and his daughter, you know, like is same age as my daughters. So I'd see him kind of often at like some of the sporting stuff, like just the physical investment that those guys make, like on the road, 250, 275 days a year, and the events and the longevity and their ability to go out and make that happen. Like, it's like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, people can call it fake, but I'm like, dude, the beating and the physicality these guys are doing is not fake. Just the fact that they have to travel that much makes me want to throw up because I don't like to travel that much. I mean, we tried it and it was awful, but just, I mean, man, imagine being on the road for like 275, 300 days a year. I mean, it's gotta be that's gotta be extremely difficult.
Yeah. Those guys work. I remember Paul Triple H. He used to say that he would do 250 nights a year.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? I mean, 250 nights doing that. Just imagine these guys get beat up, but, they do it and they love it. And obviously some of them have crossed over and are doing just really cool things. But I love all that stuff. And I just hope we continue to kind of stay connected with those worlds because, we're all trying to do the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. Just influence people in a positive way.
That's it.
Cool. Awesome, man. Dan, this is awesome, man. I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man, but this is thanks again to Hack, dude.
And let's give a shout out to Fairfax. I know he'll certainly be watching this, but I know he works real hard overseeing that International Sports Hall of Fame under the leadership of Dr. Bob Goldman, who created that Hall of Fame. And the folks who have been inducted over the years, we've mentioned many of them in this interview, Triple H among them, Stephanie among them, folks from like Johnny Bench to Evander Holyfield. I mean, it's a real eclectic, impressive club of men and women and elite level achievers in the world of sports and fitness and even some entertainment. So that's a really cool Hall of Fame. So I appreciate Fairfax for introducing us. And I'm looking forward to see who is going to be in their upcoming induction classes because each year they continue to raise the bar for sure.
Awesome. Sweet. Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Power Athlete Radio.
Bye.